I'm Philip Peterson, Chief Investment Strategist at IG Wealth Management. Join me each week as we discuss the trends dominating the investment markets. On today's special edition of the Living Markets podcast, I am joined once again by Aurel Gourcel. He is our Assistant Vice President of Tax and Estate Planning within our Advanced Financial Planning team. And Aurel, just before I bring you on officially, I just want to read a little bit of your bio because it is quite impressive. You are a chartered professional accountant, CPA as well as CMA, specializing in tax and estate planning for high net worth individuals and corporations. You've held a strategic focus on retirement and tax optimization, and you are regularly in the media and provides advisor training on retirement and taxation with the goal of helping clients build financial plans better aligned to their long-term goals. Aurel, welcome once again to the Living Markets podcast.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's great to have you join us here. We've done this a couple times now, and these podcasts are very well received by the audience. Obviously, you know, while everyone tends to be a little bit preoccupied with investments and investments returns, I would say the next more popular topic is, okay, how do we keep these returns? How do we minimize the amount in taxation that we remit back to the government? How do we, you know, pay less using all the rules to our advantage? And this is where I would say, you not only do our clients lean on you and learn a lot from your expertise and the team's expertise, but I do as well. So, you know, thank you for providing your insights on a regular basis to myself as well as to our audience.
Thank you. I hope we can continue to help educate the people who are listening.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me start off by setting up the environment and what we've seen. It has been a strong year so far. When we look at the first quarter of 2024, equity markets delivered very attractive returns, strong returns to the upside. We can argue whether or not we saw, you know, a year's worth of gain in a quarter, but regardless, I'll take it. It's positive. We remain in a bull market. April, we saw a little bit more volatility, but nothing out of the ordinary. Everything, I would argue, is somewhat expected in terms of, and I'll put it, modest volatility that we saw. Top to bottom, I think the S&P 500 retreated by maybe, you know, a little bit more than 5%, which, you know, my team and I joke is a normal Tuesday, right? It's not something that we should panic about or worry about. Talks of a recession that dominated 2023 have largely dissipated. That's not to say that, you know, there aren't some continued bumps along the road with respect to the global economy, but the risk of recession, yeah, is from a probability perspective, is likely well below 50%. We'd put it, you know, maybe somewhere around 20%, which is, you know, a normal environment, and anything that would happen would actually be a little bit more of a shock. That said, you know, bond yields remain in the United States between 4% and 5%, in Canada, you know, a little bit less than 4%. And then rate expectations are for cuts coming out of the Bank of Canada very shortly, and then following at some point later on this year out of the United States. But largely the inflation fight has been won by the central banks, if we consider, say, 3% inflation being normal. From there, we look at oil prices and commodity prices, copper, gold, and other commodities like that. And what we've seen are decent upward pressure on commodities, which, for copper in particular, and then I would add oil to that as well, is actually a positive sign that the global economy is in growth mode, doing well, and is quite healthy. Yeah, on the financial planning side, we've had the RSP deadline, which has come and gone. We've had at the beginning of the year, you know, all of a sudden you have that opportunity to invest. This year, I think it was $7,000 into a tax-free savings account. And then we got the federal budget on April 16th that had some unexpected changes to capital gains tax that I know we'll touch on. And then we can't forget the annual income tax filing deadline, which came April 30th. So, yes, you know, I will fully disclose that I got mine in hours before the deadline, but got them in nonetheless. So, Aurel, this is the time of year when, you know, from the perspective of the markets, you know, we often hear sell in May and go away. But there's some wrinkles actually to that. I would say that maybe threw a bit of a wrench in that, or might change the way we think of investing. So I'm going to start right ahead with the federal budget and one of the particular changes, and that was the capital gains tax change with the federal budget. So if you can just, you know, for the benefit of those that are listening that might not have fully appreciated the change and what it might mean, if you just, you know, talk about that first before we go into perhaps some strategies on what we might want to consider.
Yeah, for sure. The budget did throw a curveball into a lot of people's planning, whether it's short-term or long-term. Probably more long-term, but we'll talk about some of the short-term impacts and long-term impacts after I kind of take a step back and maybe explain what occurred, what was announced. So I think pretty well everyone knows that the capital gains inclusion rate is currently, and the budget's changing it, but it's currently 50%. So this applies to individuals, trusts, corporations, any entity. If you realize a capital gain, half of that gain is included in your income, net, of course, of any losses you may realize in the same year. And this amount is included in your tax on your tax return, subject to your marginal tax rate. Marginal tax rate being the tax rate that you will pay on the next dollar of income. Now, the federal budget of April 16th is proposing to increase this inclusion rate for capital gains realized to 2/3. And this would be effective for gains realized on June 25th and beyond. Now, there is a bit of a curve to this because this increased inclusion rate from 50% to 2/3 basically applies to every dollar of gain realized by a corporation. But when it comes to individuals, they have, I guess, a threshold of $250,000 of realized gains in a given year that will continue to have a 50% inclusion rate. But amounts, so capital gains realized in a given year that exceed $250,000 will see an increase to this new 2/3 inclusion rate. So basically what that means is if I realize a capital gain of $300,000 after this change is in place, after June 24th, $250,000 of that gain will be subject to a 50% inclusion rate. The other $50,000 will be included in my income at a 2/3 rate. Now, just before we go on, this is still a proposal. This was announced on April 16th, this part of a budget. There's still some uncertainty because it is not in place yet. And there's actually no legislation that's been introduced by the government. So the budget did say that more details were to come. But for all intents and purposes, given the announcement, as individuals are planning their affairs, they should probably be doing so assuming that the changes are coming.
Now, okay, so this opens up a number of issues. The first one I want to address is the one that, you know, the government, when they announced this change, they said, look, this is going to raise X number of billions of dollars over so many years. This is only going to impact, I think it was like 0.1 or 0.01% of Canadians. Yet it seems that the government in that calculation maybe forgot about all of the Canadians that own a vacation property, own investment property that, you know, when it comes, especially for those that where a cottage or vacation property has been in the family for decades or generations, that they are going to be subject to this higher capital gains tax. So I guess two questions. One, you know, did the government fall asleep at the wheel when they actually proposed this change? And two, what does it mean for property owners?
Well, whether they fell asleep or not, I'm not necessarily going to comment. This is a policy decision that they've made, whether they did it without trying or forgetting particular individuals who may be caught by these inclusion rates. I do think that it was done purposely in terms of trying to generate more tax revenue to help pay for various measures that they've introduced. But I agree that basically, if I take a step back, the average investor, the average person that's listening, when you're talking about your stocks, your bonds, your mutual funds, your marketable securities, those are relatively easy to stay within your $250,000 threshold because you can sell those as you wish, because you can sell one stock, one unit of a mutual fund, whatever you want, and manage your gains much easier than you can on rental or real estate, as you mentioned. So if I have a vacation home with a significant gain, or if I have rental properties with significant gains that I'm looking to dispose of, that's where you probably could get caught in a situation where you will trigger a gain that exceeds that $250,000 threshold. Because unlike those stocks, bonds, and mutual funds that I mentioned earlier, you can't decide to sell half your vacation home. It's an all or nothing scenario. So it's all gain or no gain. For all intents and purposes, the average investor or the average individual will probably get into or could get into a situation where part of their gains would be subject to this higher inclusion rate in one of three different scenarios. One would be your real estate investor who will get caught by the fact that if they want to dispose of any property with significant gains, they could be subject to a significant inclusion rate. The second scenario would probably be individuals who are business owners and maybe running their business through a corporation. And those individuals will essentially, when triggering a gain, possibly have access to what's called a lifetime capital gains exemption, which is proposed to increase to $1.25 million, again, on June 25th, for gains realized after that time. And if your shares qualify, you may be able to actually exempt, every shareholder would be able to exempt up to $1.25 million of gains. But if your shares don't qualify or your gains are significantly more than 1.25, then again, you could exceed that $250,000 threshold and have a significant amount of gain subject to a two-thirds inclusion rate. The third main scenario where this higher inclusion rate could apply to individuals is upon death. So if I pass away, and we all will pass away at some point, so I will eventually pass away and my assets can transfer to my spouse or common law partner on a tax-deferred basis. So no issues at that point. But upon second death, for tax purposes, you're deemed to dispose of absolutely everything at market value. Your RSPs and RIFs are fully taxable, but your investments, your home, your any other real estate you may own, that's deemed disposed of at market value, which means that all gains are realized. And that's where, because you have this combination of gains, not just gains on my investments and not just gains on my vacation home or not just gains on my rental properties, but all my gains come in on one tax return in a single year. And that's where you could have this significant tax bill attached to it and this higher inclusion rate from a 50% inclusion to two-thirds inclusion on gains above 250 could catch a lot of people with some significant gains. And that presents some planning opportunities from an estate planning perspective.
So, look, I'm not a tax expert. That's why you're here, and really appreciate your insight. But, you know, one of the things that, as you were talking about it, that triggered a thought in my head is there a benefit then, if we think about this going forward, year by year, let's say I've got the odd capital loss in my portfolio that I accumulate, would you say it's almost better to just keep carrying those losses forward if you anticipate at some point down the road to have a capital gain in excess of $250,000? Is that even an option?
Well, in a year I realize losses, I must claim those losses. So you don't really have an option. If you choose not to realize the loss, then you trigger it in the future. Or if your losses exceed your gains in a given year, then that excess of losses over gains can be carried back 3 years and recover taxes you may have already paid on some gains, or they can be carried forward. And that's where there'll be some adjustments on my capital gains inclusion rate. The government is going to introduce some transitional measures so that they consider the 50%, the two-thirds. And over the years, I mean, there's been multiple changes in inclusion rates going back to the 70s and 80s when capital gains started being taxed in the early 70s. And that the rate has gone up and down somewhere between 50%, two-thirds, 75%, back down, back up, back down. And there's always transitional measures. So yeah, in terms of your question, will realizing losses, can I choose? Not a lot. You don't have a lot of wiggle room there.
Yeah, and that's you raise a very good point when you say that, look, this rate has changed over time. Over the last, say, 50 years, it's been higher as well as lower. And there's no saying that it won't change in the future with either this government or a change in government, or at some point down the road, a change in policy. So it's planned now. It's been worse in the past. It could get better in the future.
Exactly. I mean, you can only plan with knowns, right? You can't plan for the unknown.
Exactly. So, you know, Aurel, human nature being what it is, we often put things off and provide excuses such as I'm too busy. I'll get after that after I file my taxes. I'm sure you've heard many more excuses, but it can be hard to do, or it can be hard to do everything that we know we should do. And some topics that you need to address from a financial planning perspective can be off-putting, like dealing with one's demise or death. I mean, if we want to be in the best position or put our heirs in the best position, there are things that we should be paying attention to today. What would some of those things be top of mind?
Yeah, top of mind. And this capital gains inclusion rate change really should make estate planning top of mind for individuals. Because if you look at the difference between including 50% of your gain in your taxes or 2/3 of your gain in your taxes, if you're in the top bracket, regardless of province in which you live, you're probably looking at somewhere between 7% and 9% more tax on that same dollar today versus a gain that will be realized on that same dollar June 25th and beyond. So that's a significant amount. So when you're thinking estate planning, when you're thinking tax at death, that could come at one point with a much higher tax bill. So what should you do? Well, you just finished filing your tax returns, and I'll preach to anybody who'll listen to me. Tax planning is a year-round activity. Tax preparation, it happens in the spring. Tax planning should be done throughout. And estate planning should be revisited periodically. And so people are now going, okay, finished filing my taxes. Should I be doing anything about my gains within the context of these capital raised gains changes? For the average investor, probably not, because you have that $250,000 cushion or threshold annually. You can manage your gains within that. But maybe now's a good time, as you're sitting at the beach, sitting at the vacation home over the summer, think about your estate plan. Over a glass of wine, have a chat with your spouse maybe, or your adult children. Start thinking about the implications of this incremental amount or increased amount in capital gains that'll have to be included on your final return. And go, okay, if I was planning on leaving this much to my heirs, I will now pay this much more in tax, leaves that much less for my heirs. So should insurance, life insurance, play a bigger role or in my estate plan? And while you're at it, a good estate plan is one where you've sat down with the beneficiaries, with your kids, and you've had that discussion of how assets you plan to divide your assets so that there are no surprises and you can avoid any possible not squabbles, but disagreements at a future point in time when you're not there to manage those disagreements.
Well, and you bring up insurance, and it's a very good point, because in the last couple of weeks, I've had conversations with clients that are saying, well, now that the government has done this, what is left for us to be able to use to grow our wealth that in part tax sheltered, pass it on tax sheltered? And insurance is the one. But just explain how that works for us, and not only in terms of, yeah, upon death, but between now and then, the growth of those assets.
Yeah, when you're using life insurance, and especially permanent types of policies, there's term policies and permanent policies, and I won't get into the details of each one necessarily, but we're talking permanent policies. You can build what's called a cash value of a policy. So you can not only have insurance coverage through an insurance policy, but you can put some extra cash value in there that will ultimately be paid out upon your passing tax-free to the beneficiaries. And so that allows that growth to be tax sheltered while it's in the policy and then come out tax-free later. Versus if you invest those dollars personally, then we'll have the same situation we've been talking about during this conversation. It's you're going to have a bigger capital gain possibly in the future. So insurance can play a role as much if you own it personally as for if any business owners are listening, or for those that are listening, life insurance is probably going to take an even bigger focus for small business owners and possibly owning those policies within a corporation, because there you can fund it with lower tax dollars. You can overfund the policy within the limits prescribed to get that tax deferral treatment. And when the insured passes away, that money can actually come out of the corporation to the beneficiaries on a tax-free basis for all intents and purposes. So owning it personally, owning it corporately, this is a great time to revisit that insurance strategy.
Well, and the assets aren't entirely locked up either. There are mechanisms by which you can borrow against the policy to unlock some of the value in there. And that is done effectively tax-free as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you own it personally, it can be the borrowing within its limits. There'll be prescribed limits, but, and there's an interest cost. So it's not a slam dunk, but it's certainly an option and available to you if you wish. If you're doing it within the corporation, yes, you can borrow against the policy within the corp. If you need the money personally, well, then there may be some tax issues in terms of pulling that money out of the corporation. But you can still access the money. You can borrow against the value that you've put into that policy.
Now, you know, I want to ask you this question before we move on towards the conclusion of this conversation. But you know, I often get asked the question of, well, when do I need a financial advisor? Like when, you know, or the belief by some clients is I don't need a financial advisor. Now, I often sit there and say, well, I mean, just if you've answered yes to, are you married? Do you have kids? Do you have grandkids? Are you sending kids to school? Are you, you know, if you say yes to any of that, then you do need an advisor. If it's no to everything, okay, maybe you're fine because your life has zero complications in it. But as soon as there's one little thing, you know, this is when the value of advice really comes to a fold. So you know, when someone asks you, you know, why should I work with an advisor? What's your answer to them?
Well, my answer would be that there's always value somewhere. Part of my role is to review client cases. I review dozens of cases of clients, and I must say that I probably find opportunities in every single one. You think you have it down pat, you think you have all the answers, but you don't know all the tax rules. You don't necessarily know all the investing in your realm, all the intricacies of investing, what's the best option, when's the right time to get in and out, or whatever the case may be, buy and hold. The repercussions of your actions are significant. And human nature, and I'm just as bad as anybody else, is procrastination, right? And so I'll push it down the road, And then like estate planning, for example, I'll do my will later. I'll address the insurance later, but what if something happens and you didn't plan accordingly? I always say the financial advisor may be the person who will just make you think of things that you would not have thought of before. Disturb. If anything, they will disturb. They will make you think of things that you may not have thought of. Then anything you may have missed will only improve your long-term financial health and your estate plan long-term.
Yeah. Well, thank you for those insights. You know, when I think about this time of year, I mean, we're entering into May. I'm reminded of a quote by the American writer Edwin Wade Teal, who said, "All things seem possible in May." You know, we often forget about things, saying, I'm only looking forward to summer. I don't want to think about anything else yet. I mean, this is a great time to think about the nuts and bolts of an investment portfolio, of your estate plan, of your overall financial plan, especially when things are quieter, that you can reflect as opposed to the chaos, either leading into Christmas or just after Christmas. It also, from my side, gives us an opportunity to reflect on the macroeconomic environment, you know, the markets, where we are, because summer does tend to be a little bit quieter for the markets before we head into the fall. And this year in particular, with an election coming in November, you know, there's a lot of questions that are coming about. So, you know, just to share with people the way we're thinking, again, you know, we think that the environment is one that is more on the positive side than the negative side, less risk of recession. We've had good returns thus far, and I think we can continue to see that both out of equity and fixed income. The fixed income markets are generating yields in that mid-single digit range, which we haven't seen for quite a long time. And so this is attractive for us, and it gives us that defensive posture in our portfolios to protect us against the, well, what if we're wrong and things start to go a little bit sideways? What if geopolitical tensions start to work their way into market expectations? So, you know, I guess lastly, if I had to ask you a question saying, you know, what's the one thing this time of year that you say, hey, you know what, if you do nothing else, just do this one thing. And then we'll get to the second and third thing after it, but knock this one off the list. What would that be?
Well, now that your tax return has been filed, I hope, it's again, that comment of tax planning is year-round activity. And even if it's the simple things like I make charitable donations and plan your donations for the year. Like if you can donate marketable securities with capital appreciation and capital gains, which we've been talking about a lot today, why give cash? Cash, if you have to trigger a gain to create cash later on, if you donate securities in kind, you have a 0% inclusion rate. So that's just an example of an opportunity you may miss if you don't take a step back and look into the rest of the year. And what are my medical expenses going to be? How can I plan around that? How can I plan my charitable activities and whatever else you can think of going forward, at least from my perspective, from a tax planning perspective?
So, you know, if I was going to put a bow on all this, I mean, the things that jump out at me are that, look, tax planning is a year-round exercise. Perhaps we should always be asking, well, what else can we do when we work with our advisor? Are we doing everything? Is there anything else that I'm missing? What about insurance? What about estate planning? What about this? You know, ask questions on both sides. Not only the advisor asking us questions, what are your goals, but also asking the advisor saying, are we doing everything that we need to be doing? Oh, by the way, I like to donate to my church and give, you know, whatever it is. Are there better ways that we can do it that reduces my overall tax bill? I mean, I think that's important. We put so much effort on the investment side of it. And sure, I'm going to sit there saying, yes, because I'm involved in it, it's the most important aspect. But that's not the case. It's everything else around it. And investments are such a small part of it. So, you know, I really want to thank you again for sharing your insights. You know, as we've done the last couple of times, I do want to take just a minute to get to know Aurel just a little bit more than we might not already at this time. So when you think about the summer, what is your summer vacation coming up?
I haven't really planned much other than a couple camping trips. But I would like to actually maybe go in a bit further than just a surrounding area camping. And I also want to take some time to myself. It's super busy being a tax accountant by trade. The hours can be a little long. I want to make sure I take some time to unwind. And maybe so listen to some podcasts that I have been neglecting. And I haven't been neglecting this one. So don't worry, this one's top of my list. I'm subscribed and I listen to it regularly. But some others, some self-help podcasts to not only take care of my financial health, which is my area of expertise, but the body, mind, the soul. I think summer's a great time to do that, right? Recharge the batteries. And I say tax planning is a year-round activity, and you should always plan going forward. Taking care of yourself, your mind, your body, you only have one of those. And if you don't take care of them, nobody else will.
Well, I think that's a great point. I mean, if you're not taking care of yourself, then you know, you're not going to be around long enough to take care of others. When you think about camping, so are you a car camper or a canoe camper?
Car. If I go with a buddy who's a canoe, I will go for a canoe trip for an hour or two, but I am not, let's go canoe into the wilderness for a week. I've never done it, but it's not necessarily on my bucket list either.
And then when you think about that, what has been your favorite camping location then?
I go to a location in Northern Ontario. I'm in Winnipeg. So there's a location in Northern Ontario, which has a beautiful lake, beautiful soft sand beach. The lake is crystal clear, some fishing, some hiking trails in the area, biking trails in the area. It's just a great place to unwind and enjoy a few campfires in the evening.
And one last question, if you're not doing that and you're turning on the TV, ordering something up, what is it, what's your next binge watch that you're planning?
I watch very little TV. And in fact, most of the stuff I watch, I tell everyone, is sports, mostly hockey, but some football, very little baseball. But I watch sports because I don't have to watch from beginning to end. I could just walk away, right? the game is boring or something else comes up, I get a phone call. It's like, I walk away, I can check my phone and find out what the score is later. So I have nothing on my binge watching list for the summer, but there are certainly some things that have piqued my curiosity that are coming out.
Excellent. Orel, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us again on the Living Markets Podcast. And we look forward to the next time chatting with you.
Thank you for inviting me once again.
I'm Philip Peterson, and you've been listening to the Living Markets Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please take a moment to rate it or share it with colleagues and friends. It will help other like-minded individuals find us. Thanks for listening.
The content of this podcast, including facts, views, opinions, and recommendations, is not to be used or construed as investment advice and is not an offer or an invitation to buy or sell any security. The content of this podcast should not be relied upon for any purpose, and IG Wealth Management is not responsible for any reliance upon it. This podcast includes forward-looking information that reflects our current expectations or forecasts of future events. Forward-looking information is subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions that could cause actual results to differ materially from expressed herein. Our views are subject to change based on market conditions. Commissions, fees, and expenses may be associated with mutual fund investments. Read the prospectus before investing. Mutual funds are not guaranteed, values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated.